Do you ever get sick of tuning into Beyond the Box Score and hearing me gush over how much I love a player? Or maybe you get tired of the victory laps when we hit on the Colson-Loveland types, the premature victory laps on Bill Kroski-Merritt, thinking that, you know, we're so smart here with some of these random callouts on the deep, deep sicko picks here. Today's episode is for you then, because I was too low on Quinshon Judkins for sure coming into the NFL. Man, he looked good right away. I was concerned about his specifically his fantasy football outlook coming into the NFL. I thought because of the limited nature of his receiving role, likely as a pro, he was going to have to be a Nick Chubb type of player, and I hold Nick Chubb in very rarefied air. I did not think Judkins was quite that player, that level of player. But man, he looked good. He looked dominant against NFL players right away. Basically, Judkins looked as good as he did in college, if not even maybe a little bit better. And he was doing it against pros, which is really, really noteworthy, I think, to when a rookie is able to do something like that, make the leap. And the game doesn't look like it's moving too fast for them. And then also, I'm actually not drafting Judkins, which is, you know, I'm talking all sorts of backwards here. But yeah, today I am going to actually talk about a player that I'm not drafting, and that is Quinshon Judkins. I will tell you why, but first I want to tell you why he's awesome at football, because I can't help myself. I like my job. I like football. And this guy blew me away last year. He looked borderline dominant at times as a rookie. Came against some good defenses too, 115 scrimmage yards against Detroit. Only two other backs hit 100 plus yards against that Lions defense last year. I've got his game log up here on the screen for YouTube viewers. You see that game against Green Bay, 16.5 points, 21.5 points against Detroit. Kind of burst onto the scene, 102 scrimmage yards per game across his first four, with some decent defenses here. And that included kind of an easing in process too, 25% snap rate in his first game. And still averaged over 100 yards from scrimmage across his first four games, 128 scrimmage yards against the Vikings defense. But then things kind of slowed down as the year went on. Defense is really, really low to the box against Judkins to slow him down. No running back faced stacked boxes, no qualified running backs that faced stacked boxes at a higher rate than Quinshon Judkins in 2025, 45%. Derrick Henry was next at 39%. Like Saquon Barkley had one of the highest rates last year. His rate was 31%, 45% for Judkins. The league average was 26%. And it wasn't just personnel based. So personnel has a lot to do with stacked boxes. Typically, the league average 26% rate that I told you is cut in half when offenses are playing with just one tight end on the field. It goes down to 13% stacked box rate. Judkins still saw stack boxes on 25% of his runs with one tight end on the field, though. He and Derrick Henry were the only ones who had a rate of 25% in such personnel packages last year, which I think speaks to the respect that he got after starting so hot here. And then also says a lot about the passing game in Cleveland. On plays specifically with three receivers on the field, Judkins still had an 18% stack box rate, which is triple the league average of 6%. Typically, when you're in 11 personnel, three receivers on the field, you're not getting a stack box. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't make sense. That's most likely a pass. Jaylen Warren and Jahmyr Gibbs were the only other two running backs above 10% from that personnel package, 18% for Judkins. He faced a stack box on at least half of his runs in seven different games last year, which was the highest number in the league, which is especially crazy. He only played 14 games, so half of his games he faced a stack box at least half of the time. It only happened to Derrick Henry in 6 out of 17 games, so 35%. It was 50% for Judkins. Jaylen Warren was another running back who faced a ton of stack boxes last year. He ranked third in terms of the number of games where he faced a stack box on at least half of his runs, and happened four times. Judkins hit it seven times in 14 games. So absolutely no respect for the passing game last year. Maybe that changes this year. You know, we got Todd Monken, hopefully injecting some life into this offense. And then also they added two rookie receivers that are exciting. Another year with Harold Fannin, like maybe there's a little bit more respect for the passing game this year, but I think we know who's going to be quarterbacking this offense, or have a pretty good idea of who it might be. And I'm anticipating Jokinen's going to face a lot of stack boxes. Again, I told you I'm not drafting him. There are reasons why, even though he's really good. So I want to start by contextualizing. If you look at the data, you know, if you look at the yards per carry, for example, it's not going to look very good for Quinjon Jenkins, but he was fighting an uphill battle in the snow with the whole team trying to carry them on his back. Like, it was a different set of circumstances than any running back in the league last year. Different set of circumstances than any running back we've really seen. Statistically, at least, it's borne out that way. So, like, I provided an Ashton Jeanty breakdown here on Beyond the Box Score. If you want to check that out, he averaged just 0.6 yards before contact per rush, Jeanty, which is really low. Out of running backs during the time I have the data available, which dates back to 2012, out of running backs who have had at least 250 rushes in a season, that ranks Jeanty 115th out of 115. 0.6. Jenkins' rate was 0.4, which, if you look at running backs with at least 150 or more rushes, so you lower the qualifier a little bit, that gets you to 250 running backs in that group. He's by far the lowest out of that group, 0.4 yards before contact per rush. This is why you have to go beyond the box score. You can't just look at 3.6 yards per carry or whatever and think that he did not have a good season. You got to go beyond the advanced stats here with Jenkins, honestly, because, like, with Jeanty or like Kenneth Walker, let me point you to a few more profiles that I put out on YouTube here. Bashal Tuten is another one. Like, you can look at some advanced stats that, you know, paint this running back as somebody who could be much better if the situation is much better. Kenneth Walker, for sure. I think with Eric Bieniemy helping him in Kansas City here, with the Chiefs offensive line potentially helping him, things could be a lot better. And there's advanced stats that point to that. My favorite Ashton Jeanty stat is that, like, he averaged basically identical per touch numbers to Bijan Robinson across the board on runs where he got at least to the line of scrimmage before initial contact. We don't really have any of those stats for Jenkins, honestly. Like, across the board, the stats look bad, even the advanced stats. I think that's how bad it was in Cleveland. So this is straight up like a film bro take here. It's like, you've got to trust me, I've watched this guy's film kind of a take, which I don't feel super comfortable doing. That's not my wheelhouse. That's not typically where I like to be when I'm coming to you with something that I think is compelling. I like for there to be data that helps illustrate it and helps, you know, tell the story of what we're seeing on film. And with Jenkins, it's hard to find that. It really is. But his film was so impressive that I'm still comfortable betting on him long term, unless he continues to, like, have serious injuries or something. If we get anything resembling competence in the offensive ecosystem in the future, I think Jenkins has the talent to be one of the best running backs in the NFL. So he was really, really impressive as a rookie. Contact balance was really good. Timing and feel for space and patience was also really, really good. There were a lot of rookies this year who struggled translating their game from college to the pros. It felt like things were moving way too fast for them. RJ Harvey comes to mind, Bashal Tuten, even Jeanty at times, as he was in a dysfunctional offense and was getting overwhelmed all the time. I thought Jenkins was really good at making something out of nothing, and his feel for space and his patience and timing setting up his blocks allowed him to actually get some big plays when there was blocking. It wasn't very often, but occasionally there was, and he was able to turn those into big plays. I've tweeted out every running back's explosive play reel, and so he tied Omarion Hampton for second among the rookies. Here's my Twitter if you don't know who I am or what I'm talking about here. At @jgibbs_23, you can find all these cut-ups, and you'll find Quinjon Jenkins. He had 11 explosive plays as a rookie, and I think that you'll be really impressed with each of these plays. So all it really takes, I think, is just a little bit of timing and rhythm with the offensive line and everything being cohesive, and Jenkins could take off. I really was impressed with his film. A stat that kind of illustrates what I'm talking about with the timing is Next Gen Stats tracks average time to the line of scrimmage and efficiency of movement. And so like the most efficient running backs in terms of their efficiency of movement, in terms of like getting horizontal or getting vertical, were Javonte Williams, James Cook, Rico Dowdle, Derrick Henry, Kyren Williams. It's those, you know, those kind of straight ahead style of runners. The least efficient were like RJ Harvey, who I think was doing a little bit too much dancing. Kenneth Walker sometimes falls into that. Bucky Irving sometimes falls into that. Judkins kind of falls into the latter group. He was eighth least efficient and sixth most time behind the line of scrimmage last year. I think behind a good offensive line, this running style could be awesome. Like, we laud praise on Bijan Robinson for his patience and vision, but he's, you know, in the same range as Judkins in these stats. And it's kind of the same thing for Bucky Irving during his rookie season. And then in year two, it kind of fell off when the offensive line was playing not as well and the design was not as good with the offensive coordinator there. Even like Kenneth Walker, I think it's pretty clear just looking at his season last year during the Super Bowl, he looked like a freaking juiced up version of Le'Veon Bell. And even that same season, though, when it wasn't working for Kenneth Walker, like the running style gets criticized, right? Zach Charbonnet is getting more work because he's willing to go straight ahead or whatever, you know? Like, so I think that's kind of the type of runner that Judkins is. And at his best, I think he has decisiveness when needed, but there really weren't very many holes last year. But at his best, if he's in a situation where the line is working, I think he could get into that, not Bijan, but like get into that upper tier of runners who run with patience and timing and have a good feel for space. And the last thing they showed up on film was just really, really impressive juice. Like, he's fast. He really looks fast out there against NFL guys. And clearly has the burst that like showed up in the combine testing with the ridiculous broad jump and everything. So that's all exciting. Like, on film, I couldn't have been more impressed, I don't think, honestly, with Judkins, given the expectations and everything. The other thing that's exciting is he was a legitimate workhorse, which is something that we could have expected. He's built for it for sure. I've got a made up stat here. It's called horsepower rating. And so it's a percentage of games where the running back accounted for at least one third of the offensive scrimmage yards. Bijan Robinson at the top with a ridiculous 71% rate. Devon Achane and Christian McCaffrey are next, 56, 53%. Then you've got, you know, these are the guys. These are the bell cows. Jonathan Taylor, Derrick Henry, Saquon Barkley, Breece Hall all fall in this 38 to 41% range. And then is Ashton Jeanty and Quinshon Judkins, 35% for Jeanty, 29% for Judkins. Pretty impressive for a rookie, especially when you consider his last game, he left with an injury. His first game, he only played 25% of the snaps. So really, his rate's probably more in line with Jeanty, where as a rookie, an offense was running through this running back, which I do think says a lot. Okay, so what does it all mean for fantasy? Like, it's obvious that I'm pretty enamored with him for real life purposes. He came in into this terrible situation, was able to show some semblance of honest, respectable running back play, even though everything else about the offense was a complete mess. What does it mean for fantasy? I want to point you to an episode that I did with Ryan Heath. So we're doing lots of these shorter videos where we go into player-specific breakdowns, but we've got our live videos every Tuesday and Thursday. And Ryan's helping us do a series where we look at each position and which stats matter for predicting the next season's success for fantasy purposes. And in the running back portion of this, it's really simple. It's basically how did they perform the year prior in terms of fantasy points per game, and then also expected fantasy points per game, which is a model, a proprietary model formed by Fantasy Points Data, where Ryan works, that estimates, based off of the circumstances of each individual play and where the touch occurred, how many fantasy points we can expect for the running backs. And Judkins did really well in that metric, actually. He was running back 17 in expected fantasy points per game last year. He was only running back 26, though, in actual fantasy points per game. And so this is basically the ethos of why I'm nervous about drafting Judkins, is just the Browns of it all, just simply the Browns of it all. But if you want to take the optimistic view, Todd Monken has been really good in terms of boosting running back efficiency. And so I've got some charts here, courtesy of our guy, Ryan. Shout out Ryan Heath again, always. The first one is historical backfield versus actual expected fantasy points per game. So it's actual and expected fantasy points per game, with expected fantasy points being to the right and actual fantasy points being here on the left side. And so you see Monken, is his backfields have outproduced expectations. And they've been one of the most productive backfields, really. It's like Monken, Joe Brady, Liam Cohen, Josh McDaniels, Kyle Shanahan, Mike McDaniel all fall in the same range, with the only two being definitively above them in fantasy points per game are, you know, the Ben Johnson Bears slash Lions and Zach Robinson, who's been with Bijan Robinson. Another chart from Ryan is this one looks even better for Monken. Historical yards per carry versus rush attempts per game. So yards per carry is going up here, and then rush attempts per game is going to the right. And at the far top right corner is Todd Monken. And of course, Derrick Henry helps this, but it's not just Derrick Henry. Monken is, I mean, I dug into Monken a little bit more, his history with running backs, and it's really, really impressive. So Gus Edwards, his best season came with Monken. He had 810 rushing yards and 13 touchdowns on the ground in his one season with Monken. He had 17 touchdowns across five seasons otherwise, 13 with Monken. At Georgia, he spent 3 years there, Monken did. He turned Zamir White into an absolute success rate machine. And James Cook had by far his best seasons with Monken. He was just Dalvin Cook's little brother, who nobody knew much about before that. And then he got unlocked under Monken. So he had 472 rushing yards and 4 touchdowns across his first 2 seasons with Georgia, and then 1,031 and 10 across his final 2 seasons with Monken. He and Zamir White combined for 3,300 scrimmage yards and 38 scrimmage touchdowns across those 2 seasons. So the only backfields that produced more rushing yards than Georgia during those seasons were Ohio State, and then, of course, the legendary North Carolina backfield that honestly wasn't legendary, but I just loved these guys. It was Javonte Williams, Michael Carter, and Ty Chandler. They were so good at one point in their career. Maybe not the best pros. Javonte's turning it around. But yeah, even the year after Cook and Zamir White got drafted, Georgia still ranked 4th in the nation in rushing yards on running back runs and tied for 1st in running back rushing touchdowns. And that was a backfield led by round 7 pick Kenny McIntosh. So Monken has had great success in the run game. It's not just like, you know, Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson. Of course, he had great success. Like, pretty much across the board, he's had great success with running back runs for the past like 6 or 7 years. You have to look all the way back to his Tampa Bay days to like point out any running games that didn't work. And so that's the bull case, if there is a bullish case we made about this Cleveland offense. If you do want to invest in Junkins, because he was running back 17 in expected fantasy points per game last year. So if Monken helps boost the efficiency here and that usage actually amounts to something, then it, you know, maybe he is a decent pick for fantasy. I just don't feel great about it, because I just ultimately think that the best case for this Cleveland offense is so capped by what we're looking at the quarterback position. But still, I do want to just hit on like how great the usage really was. So I mentioned he left with an injury in the last game, and then he was easing in the first game. In between that, the weeks 3 through 15 games, he averaged 19 touches per game, which is obviously a ton. He had 26% of the team's offensive scrimmage yards, which would have ranked as running back 11 last year. He had 37% of the offense's scrimmage touchdowns. Only Jenty and Jonathan Taylor had higher rates last year. So clearly has bell cow potential and is a really good player. And the line could be better. The line was remade this offseason. I don't know that I have a lot of faith that it's going to be good or anything like that, but it's different than it was last year. My concerns with Jenty or with Junkins are simply the offense, and then also the receiving role, and then the third thing being the health, the dislocate. All the reports are good this offseason, but he did dislocate his ankle and fracture his fibula in week 16. So that's a really, really serious injury. He's a young guy. He's a really, really athletic guy, so it might be fine, but that's a very serious injury late in the season. So I want to let you know how impressive the year one stuff was, because I think in a better offensive environment, even if his receiving role remains limited, which I think it could get better. We've seen like Kenneth Walker has gotten a little bit more and more trust in the receiving game. Jonathan Taylor, like sometimes it happens for guys who didn't get much in college or early on as a pro. But if it doesn't get better, I still think he's potentially so good that he, in a better offensive environment for fantasy, could be like a Josh Jacobs or a James Cook type of producer for fantasy, where like even if there aren't a ton of receptions, or if he's not on the field for 80% of the snaps or whatever, he could be so good individually. And if the team is good, he could even be like maybe a Jonathan Taylor type of player if he proves to be like one of the best talents in the league at the position. And so that's the question, is has he given us enough to warrant that type of upside long-term excitement? I don't know on that. I said at the beginning of the show that the collegiate data suggested that he needed to be kind of like a Nick Chubb type. I want to spend a little bit of time with that comparison because it is fun. Like we've got, you know, the ties to the Cleveland Browns where Chubb started his career and everything. And they are similar players in terms of the way that their stats come, like almost exclusively on the ground, primarily on the ground. And then also through big plays, the vision, the cutbacks and everything, the strength and athleticism as runners, kind of high stuffed rates, especially early on for Chubb. So there are a lot of parallels to be drawn. So I did look at the two, and it's pretty clear that Chubb's rookie season, while similar in some ways to Junkins, was better. To be fair, that 2018 Browns team was a little bit better than this one. I mean, they weren't good though. Like they had a midseason firing of their head coach. They won 7 games. They were trailing on 45% of their offensive plays. So for this year's or last year's 5-win Browns team, that rate was 49%. So fairly similar. Also a lot of offensive line struggles in terms of letting penetration into the backfield early. I gave you that before contact stat. It was 0.4 was like one of the worst rates we've ever seen for Junkins, 0.4 yards before contact. For Nick Chubb, it was just 0.7. So here's a look at that Browns backfield. One thing that stood out to me was Junkins, he was slightly better than the backfield at large, was clearly better than Dylan Sampson in terms of efficiency. Sampson only averaged 2.7 yards per rush. And I actually like Sampson. I think he's a pretty good player, pretty good prospect. But yeah, Juggins was slightly. If you look at this Nick Chubb backfield here, where he was sharing with Carlos Hyde and Duke Johnson, he was, I think, pretty clearly the best option in the backfield. I mean, Duke Johnson has some good efficiency stats, but he was also like, look at this, 0% of his runs came against stack boxes. So like he was getting in for obvious passing downs and getting runs out of shotgun compared to Nick Chubb with a 34% rate. So there are similarities here where it's not 45% stack boxes, but it's a really high rate for Nick Chubb. And then he's creating a lot of these yards after contact because he's not getting many yards before contact. But what stood out to me was Chubb was clearly better than the rest of his backfield in a way that Junkins wasn't really. He was basically just slightly better than the rest of the team was. And then aside from that, Chubb's numbers just compared to Junkins were clearly better. Better success rate, better rushing EPA, similar stuff rates, higher explosive run rate, more scrimmage yards, higher avoided tackle rate. And then he averaged 5.2 yards per rush, even with just the 0.7 yards before contact and the high stack box rate. So I don't think it's fair at this point to try to say that he's going to be the next Nick Chubb. I think that the burden of proof is still on Junkins. Like it requires a huge leap of faith at this point to say he's that level of a player. And so ultimately, I'm pretty nervous about this year for Junkins for fantasy. I would much rather just let other people draft him and wait and see how he recovers, how his health is going to look and everything. And then if we get a buying opportunity at some point, whether it's Dynasty or maybe he just gets ranked a little bit too low for 2027 redraft purposes because this year isn't that great. Just know how good this player is and how high the upside is in the right situation. So here are my running back rankings. I've given you some profiles on some of the rookies lately. I've ended up very high on Ashton Jeanty and Amarian Hampton. They both come in my top 10. As I work my way down the rankings here, we're not finding Quinshon Judkins. There he is, running back 23. I think he belongs basically in this group here, which is like Travis Etienne and Breece Hall. It's Travis Etienne now and Breece Hall. I feel a little bit more confidence in the Saints offense than I do the Browns. I mean, quite a bit more confidence, honestly. I guess the Jets are a sort of similar type of situation where we have offensive concerns, but Breece Hall, I think, has a lot more receiving upside. And like Judkins is a really, really good player. I believe that. And so this is where I'm at with him. I want to be higher because of the RB17 XFP per game ranking last year and the fact that Todd Monken could help things and the fact that Judkins looks really good himself. But I honestly, this is as high as I could push him. I've got David Montgomery behind him, and I could definitely see the case for moving Montgomery ahead of him. I think Trayvon Henderson has significantly more upside than Judkins. And while there's risk with Henderson for sure, there's also risk with Judkins. Like, Dylan Sampson is, I think, going to play a very prominent role on passing downs. And Judkins has the injury concerns, and we don't know how the offensive line is going to play. Like, it's very possible that this is a player who you're having a hard time getting in your fantasy lineup. And there are going to be some times where it's, if he doesn't get a touchdown and he only has a reception or two, you're getting 5, 6, 7, 8 points or whatever. So there's a very real floor for Judkins that is scary. And I'm just not so sure how high the upside is. Unfortunately, that's the name of the game, right? We're playing fantasy football. So sometimes it really doesn't matter how good these players are in real life. But it still is fun to dig into the film and the data on these players and get an idea of how good they are. So that when the situation aligns, you can be ready to be in early and get them at a discount. And so that's why I wanted to point you to the Bashaul Tootens of the world, these other profiles we've been hitting on that I think are important, where if any of these stand out to you and are interesting, do check it out. Cause I think that we've got some new coaches, some new offensive line situations and everything where some of these players could be severely mispriced. We'll see where everything shakes out. Like we're still very early in draft season. So the average draft position for some of these players might rise for sure. But I think that there's some really big potential with some of these players. And I think it's worth understanding how they score their points and what might happen if, depending on the range of outcomes that we have for these offenses, if things go well, if the offensive line that we're excited about actually does all come together and everything, how it could be like much, much different for Kenneth Walker, for example, or if Luther Burden steps into the role that we're expecting, like what could that mean? I think it could be something huge, you know? And so that's what we've been doing this offseason. Dan and I is just digging into the ranges of outcomes for these players to kind of help you think through it and make your own decisions when your draft does come. All right. Thanks for being here. I've got to ask you, please do like the video. If you have not, please just make a pattern of liking the video when you come here and check out all the stuff that Dan and I are putting up. That would help us out a lot. We're putting a lot of time into getting the new YouTube channel up and running. So if you haven't subscribed, please do that. If you listen on audio, thanks for being here as well. Feel free to leave a comment on Spotify. Or if you haven't left a review on Apple, that would be great. We really do appreciate all the ways that you do support us. Until next time, I'll see you then. And thanks for tuning in to Beyond the Back Door. Take it easy.
Now streaming only on Paramount Plus.
Chicago, it's my home.
The acclaimed series, The Chi, reaches its final chapter.
This is The Chi. Anything's possible.
The Chi, the final season now streaming only on Paramount Plus.